It's 8 a.m. and you're listening to the regional newscast from KVNF in Paonia. I'm Patricia Naft. Cars were backed up for 7 miles on Colorado Highway 330 before the service for the three men who died last week in the Colburn landslide. More than 1,000 people overflowed the gym, including more than 200 immediate family members and more than 50 search and rescue members and firefighters from the Plateau Valley and surrounding departments. Two of the victims were volunteer firefighters. Family members brought attendees to tears as they talked of their loss. Their passing was commemorated with a minute of silence. The packed gym went silent at 5:44 p.m., 1 week to the minute, when Wesley Melvin Hawkins, Clarence Allen Nichols, and Daniel Allen Nichols were buried in the monster slide that experts say bore down on them so quickly there was no chance to escape. The three had lived most of their lives in the area. They loved the outdoors. They loved the mountain that buried them. Experts and local authorities have been studying the slide in every way possible. They now have satellites and cameras aimed at it. They have used drones, airplanes, and helicopters to survey it from the air. Sunday, they began 2 days of flights over a large area stretching from Colburn to Vega Reservoir using a technology called LIDAR, short for Light Detection and Ranging, remapping the topography of the slide in images that essentially X-ray the area. Another 50 million cubic meters of slidable material is still perched at the top of the slide, with a lake filling behind it. Governor John Hickenlooper signed an executive order Friday that declared a state of disaster for the area affected by the landslide on the Grand Mesa. The slide has been considered a threat to 35 homes and structures below it along West Salt Creek Road, but that danger has been reduced by authorities on Sunday. What we are starting to feel is that a large movement is less likely than we initially thought, said Bill Edwards, regional director of the Grand Mesa Uncompahgre and Gunnison National Forest, where the slide originated. He said that the slide is considered stable enough at this point to put geologists on the slide yesterday to place monitors that will be able to detect any movement. The governor last week earmarked $500,000 from the state's Disaster Emergency Fund to help pay for the response and technical assessment of the slide. The Western Slope chapter of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association has pitched in about $50,000 for the Caring for Colburn Fund, which will go to help the families and community. Funds have been set up for the families of the three victims at Grand Valley Bank in Colburn. From Harvest Public Media, Luke Runyon looks into how Canadians may help jumpstart the new hemp industry emerging in the U.S.
The showroom at the Adams County, Colorado Conference Center is decked out in hemp products. Lotions, clothing, and pouches of processed hemp seeds sit on tables. The state recently gave the green light to dozens of hemp growers. Tonight's gathering pulled in more than 100 interested farmers.
This is more people than I anticipated.
Kevin Greenwood is one of the conference's top billed speakers. He's director of marketing for the Canadian hemp food company, Manitoba Harvest.
We're the largest hemp food company in the world. And vertically integrated, we go right from the producer's field right through to the consumer packaged goods at, you know, Kroger, Costco.
The company's been around since Canadian lawmakers legalized industrial hemp, which lacks the intoxicating compounds found in its cousin, marijuana. It's mostly grown for its fibers and seeds, and has been touted as a miracle crop by proponents. The recent farm bill allows for some planting after years of lobbying. So as the U.S. hemp industry teeters on the edge of becoming legal, Greenwood's message to the American farmer is this.
Look north. We're happy to give you the answers. You're not starting from scratch. The industry's been around in North America, albeit north of the 49th parallel, for 15, 16 years now.
Meaning cross-border cooperation could jumpstart the American hemp industry. His presentation is part sales pitch. If and when the legal issues get ironed out, Greenwood says his company will be first in line to buy American-grown hemp.
You know, I mean, we do get a little flack occasionally from some of our producers who say, hey, listen, we like the fact that we have a monopoly. And I said, yeah, but the problem is we're not getting enough acres in the ground to support the growth of the industry.
Let's look at the reality.
Eric Steenstra is president of Vote Hemp, the biggest hemp lobby group in the U.S.
The reality is that right now Canadians, for example, have been growing hemp for 15 years. It's still a niche crop there, right? but what's the potential?
Steenstra says what Canada offers is lessons. They've been through the process of building a hemp industry from scratch. And if American farmers don't listen to our northern neighbors, they could end up making the same mistakes. Lesson one, temper expectations that hemp will be a savior crop for struggling farmers. Two, be strategic with where to plant. Capitalize on the American grain belt in Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas. And three, don't reinvent the wheel. Build upon existing infrastructure in Canada.
There's no question in my mind that this could be a multi-billion dollar crop where we could see, you know, millions of acres eventually. Is that going to happen in a year or two? Of course not.
Steenstra says Canada also makes a compelling economic argument for the plant's legalization. If you frame it as farmers being denied trade access with Canada, Steenstra says congressional ears perk up.
So this is 2-ounce bar, and it's got about 8 grams of protein.
In a commercial kitchen in Denver, Ari Sherman shows off one of his hemp protein bars. Sherman's company, Evo Hemp, churns out thousands of bars each month, packed full of tree nuts, algae, dried cherries, and hemp seeds from Canada.
You know, out of all the ingredients which we use, which is about 30 different ones, hemp is by far the most in-demand food source that we have.
Sherman says his company is built on Canadian hemp. He'd like to start buying hemp from American growers. But right now, no one's growing on a large scale. Businesses like Sherman's are caught in a bind. They like to market themselves as environmentally friendly, but they're forced to ship hemp from China, Romania, Ukraine, and of course, Canada.
We're trying to be a sustainable company, and you know, sourcing all these ingredients from all over the world can be taxing on the environment. So not only financially, but environmentally, it's tough.
Which means until hemp is grown closer to home, businesses like Sherman's will continue their cozy relationship with foreign hemp growers. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find other stories or comment on this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. The Aspen Times reports medical marijuana patients who legally use pot on their own time, away from the workplace, and lose their job when they fail a drug test shouldn't surrender without a fight, according to Kimberly Ryan, a Denver attorney who spoke last week at the 2014 Aspen Legal Seminar held by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Ryan said too many people refuse to challenge dismissal because Colorado is an at-will employment state. Ryan said an increasing number of employers are realizing it's a shaky legal position to fire employees for using medical marijuana off the job. Employers tend to settle rather than expose their employment policies in a court fight, she said. The rights of medical marijuana patients in the workplace are expected to grow into a bigger legal dilemma now that 21 states have joined Colorado in approving that type of pot use. In one case, she cited, a 23-year-old man was on medical leave from his job at a warehouse to treat testicular cancer. He used medical marijuana as part of his treatment and stopped using it prior to returning to work. He was tested for drugs and failed because remnants of his pot use remained in his system, according to Ryan, who has negotiated hundreds of thousands of dollars in out-of-court settlements for clients. It is unfair to portray all companies as looking for a way to terminate medical marijuana users, Ryan said. Many are grappling to balance rights of medical marijuana users with drug-free workplace rules. On the other hand, Ryan suspects some employers are targeting employees who possess medical marijuana cards with allegedly random tests so they can terminate them. It's very clear that employers can prohibit use at work, Ryan said, but until the law becomes clear, she believes that many medical marijuana patients who select to take a workplace drug test and they know they're going to fail should refuse to take the test. It would be better to challenge termination over insubordination than with a failed drug test at this time, she said. Stay tuned for Chase and the Tuesday Morning Music Mix. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.